Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Hi, this is Ed. Welcome to Digital Voices. I'm really excited today because, as you know, we talk about digital voices from multiple perspectives. We talk about it from the payer, the provider, pharma, all of life sciences, big tech, retail, most importantly, patients. But also part of that ecosystem is really outcomes performance organizations. And so they play a key role. So we definitely want to hear the digital voice of that sector. So really excited about this topic today. And just a quick story about my first interaction with a firm that does healthcare outcomes performance. I was really young. I was working at Poudre Valley Hospital in the OR. I was the OR like systems manager. So I had started off in anesthesia as an anesthesia tech, and I had a little bit of computer skills. So they said, hey, Ed, would you be our computer sort of systems manager? So they were implementing a system for the operating rooms. And I said, sure. And so I started that role. And I remember one day, there were these two individuals who I thought they sort of looked like pharmacy reps. They were kept peering into the window of my office. I couldn't figure out exactly who they were or what they wanted. And finally they came in. They didn't even knock. They just opened the door and they flashed their badges. One of them was from the FBI and one of them was from the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. And they were like, we need to have your computer. And I was like, what? And so it turns out that one of our physicians, actually a heart surgeon, was doing procedures, let's just say a single bypass surgery, but billing for quadruple bypass surgeries. And so all the information they needed was in a computer system. So anyways, we revamped the OR after that in many, many ways. And we hired a healthcare outcomes performance company to come in. And it was a dramatic difference after they left in terms of bending the cost curve, in terms of increasing the quality of care, and of course, doing everything right, having the guardrails in so no one could ever do anything like that again. But I just remembered that going way back. And so that's what we want to talk about today is really healthcare outcomes performance company. And talk to the CEO, Will Barsoom, Dr. Will Barsoom, about the company and how they do bend the cost curve and how they do increase the clinical performance. And so I first met Will back at the Cleveland Clinic. So we were peers at the Cleveland Clinic, and I think it may have been my first week and I was invited to a concert. And in that concert was a band called Skin and Bones. And then, and there was Will, he was the front man. So it was wild. And it really, I thought it was so cool that you could be an executive and at the same time, let your guard down and be a real person. And that was my interaction with Will my entire time that we served together on the C-suite, where he was always the first to come up to me afterwards, after a meeting, or if we were working through a challenging situation. And he was just real, like, hey, I heard what you said and I wanted to follow up with you. Hey, talk to me, let's work through this. And we did. It was just a fabulous, he's just a fabulous person. So not only a great leader, a great physician, but a fabulous person. So thrilled to be with Will and talk about all these things I mentioned. And Will, as we get into it, one, welcome. And as part of your welcome, we want to hear from you. What is your favorite band and favorite songs?
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you very much for the kind introduction, Ed. I'm absolutely honored and I'm honored to be here with you. I think today my favorite band is probably Coldplay. I love Coldplay. I love their versatility. I just think they have a great sound. But it's interesting, my very favorite songs are a very kind of different era and a different sound. One of them is Rosanna by Toto.
And
I love that song. And the other is Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears. And if you listen to those two songs, one of the things that I really love about both of those bands is the versatility that they show within each song. The songs are complex. They have completely different sections, but they all kind of come together in this awesome kind of rock symphony. So those are my favorite songs.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's just always interesting to hear, especially from a musician yourself, you know, what some of your influences are. So as we get into this, tell us a little bit about your passion, your life message, or mantras.
Sure. So I'll tell you, my family has a great little mantra that we live by, which is wake up, say a prayer, and kick butt. That's kind of what we kind of live by. My middle daughter, her little mat outside of her shower door says, "Be awesome today." And that's kind of what we live by. We try to, you know, the whole crew, the whole Barsoom clan tries to kind of get up in the morning and make a difference. And you know, the idea is to try to kind of make the world a little bit better, either with a smile, with a kind word, with something meaningful to somebody else that day. And that's kind of really what we kind of live by.
No, I love that. That's really good. So, Will, tell us your story. Obviously, you're a very accomplished surgeon. You're an accomplished leader, a musician. So I think as we get into the questions, it would be good to start out just with your story, like a little bit about yourself and your professional journey.
Sure, happy to. So I'm actually an immigrant. I was born in Jordan to Egyptian parents. So I lived a little bit of my life in Jordan, a little bit of my life in Egypt, and moved here as a kid. My father did an internship at the University of Oklahoma, and then a residency in anesthesia at the Cleveland Clinic. And I remember vividly, my mom didn't speak English when we moved here. My father was working constantly. So it was, you know, you kind of learn early on that hard work really pays off. And it's kind of interesting, Ed, because my dad, we had one car and we would drop my father off in the morning and then pick him up the next night from his call. And you'll remember the Bunce building at the Cleveland Clinic. And that was kind of, it was that back entrance to the Bunce building that he went in and out of. And a few years later, you know, I ended up going in and out of that door for 5 years as a resident at the Cleveland Clinic. So it was just kind of interesting. And, you know, over time, medicine was kind of in me. I mean, I grew up with it either by watching my father or I played lots of sports growing up. So I was frequently in the orthopedic surgeon's office. And really had a great appreciation for the work they did. In fact, I don't know, probably 25 years after a lacrosse injury that I had, my orthopedic surgeon as a kid came and saw me for a knee replacement. I actually ended up taking care of him for a knee replacement, which was awesome. And he was, by the way, a great patient. So I ended up after my residency and I did my residency at the Cleveland Clinic in orthopedic surgery, my fellowship at New England Baptist Hospital in adult reconstructive surgery, hip and knee replacement. After that, I spent the rest of my career at the Cleveland Clinic until about 6 months ago. And one of the things that was really unique for me at the Cleveland Clinic was the opportunity to learn and to grow as an administrative leader there. So I had a super busy hip and knee replacement practice. I was publishing a lot of papers and doing a lot of research and kind of growing my academic and my clinical reputation and really enjoying it. And then I was offered the opportunity to become the chairman of surgical operations. So that group oversaw about 200 operating rooms across the Cleveland Clinic Health System. And it was an awesome kind of hands-on opportunity to earn kind of a real-world MBA. How do you manage supply chain? How do you manage people? How do you manage scheduling and operations and logistics? So that was a great experience. And then one day, kind of out of the blue, I got a phone call from Joe Hahn, who was our chief of staff, a wonderful, incredible, incredible human being and role model. And he said, "Listen, Will, what do you think about going down to Florida and being the president of our operations in Florida?" So I jumped at the opportunity. Initially, I said I'll do it for 90 days to kind of stabilize the ship until we find the right leader. Then ended up becoming a year, added another year, and in the end, I ended up spending about 6.5 years as the CEO of Cleveland Clinic Florida, and then joined Hopco as the president of Hopco, and it's been just an absolutely awesome ride, and I've been having a great time.
Yeah, that's a really interesting journey. So tell us more about Hopco. So So what do you all do?
Sure. So Hopco was established about 15 years ago by an orthopedic surgeon named David Jakowski. And David acts today as the chairman and CEO of Hopco. I'm the president and chief transformation officer. He is also a highly trained orthopedic surgeon, meaning he trained at Mayo Clinic for his residency, and then he went off to Johns Hopkins to do his musculoskeletal oncology fellowship. Went back to Mayo Clinic right around the same time I was going back to the Cleveland Clinic. We became good friends and were talking. And I remember vividly Dave calling me, it was maybe 12 or 13 years ago, saying, hey, why don't you come with me? I'm going to go to Phoenix. I'm leaving Mayo Clinic. I'm going to go to Phoenix. I'm going to start a practice, and I'm going to start a company that manages practices, works with hospitals, and ultimately works with insurance companies to take full subcapitated musculoskeletal global risk. And I remember looking at him saying, I don't understand anything you're saying right now. This is like another language to a guy that lives in a fee-for-service world. The whole idea of value-based healthcare was just, starting to scratch the surface, right? The only example that most of us could ever even imagine around that line of work was Kaiser. That was really what we would think about when we think about taking risk and value-based care. Turns out he was way ahead of the game. Dave started a practice with three orthopedic surgeons, all Mayo Clinic trained. That practice ended up being managed by Hopco. It's called the Core Institute. It is now the largest practice I think it may actually be the largest single practice in the country right now, because it's not it's not an umbrella of lots of other practices that are kind of connected. It is a single practice with 200 musculoskeletal providers throughout Arizona. Really impressive. Wow. And their growth has really been shepherded to a large degree by Hopco. So what Hopco does, and Hopco stands for Healthcare Outcomes Performance Company, is it has several verticals. One of the verticals is a practice MSO vertical, where we'll work with a practice and kind of, offer as much or as little as they want in terms of marketing, supply chain management, logistics management, template management, human resources, all kind of the back office things that can sometimes take folks away from their day jobs and what they're really good at. So that's kind of the first vertical. The second vertical is a vertical that will work with healthcare systems and actually manage the service line for a healthcare system around musculoskeletal care, soup to nuts. So we'll work with a hospital or a hospital system. It'll be kind of white labeled under their brand or whatever brand they want to use. And we'll work with them on things like scheduling, first case starts, turnover times, SPD, supply chain. and really try to drive high value care in that hospital. The third arm of our business actually owns facilities. So we own or manage ASCs, musculoskeletal specialty hospitals. But then the fourth arm, which is perhaps the most interesting arm, is the fact that we build musculoskeletal clinically integrated networks in communities. So what we'll do is our practice partners, our hospital partners, and Hopco will together create a clinically integrated network that will go to payers and offer to take full risk on the musculoskeletal spend. Well, you might say, well, how do you do that? How do you know exactly what the musculoskeletal spend is? So we actually define it very broadly. So if you look at all of the ICD-10 codes that exist today, we carve out about a third of those codes, and those have anything to do with pain, musculoskeletal pain, any of the musculoskeletal system, including, by the way, neurospine and podiatry, chiropractic care, and anything that falls into one of those, it's about 27,000 ICD-10 codes, we in essence act as the insurer for those codes. So we pay for everything associated with those codes, whether it's an MRI, surgery. A patient is out of network and falls and breaks their hip, we pay that bill. So we'll subcapitate all of that care kind of on a per member per month basis, and we will end up acting as the insurance company, working with the insurance company on that. You know, in addition to the subcapitated care, we were one of the top five conveners of orthopedic bundles in the country today. Again, we have about 150 partnerships around the country, and everything that we do we do as a partner, Ed. We're not a consulting company. I mean, we will do some consulting if we have to, but we're really much more of a partner, and we like to develop strong partnerships with the organizations that we work with.
No, that's huge, and I appreciate the partnership aspect of it, and I believe that coming from you in our previous relationship, that you all operate that way. And yeah, I think you mentioned over 150 hospital partnerships.
That's
Is that right.
Right? Yeah. Well, between hospitals and practices, about 150, and candidly, it's literally growing every day.
So where I don't want to lead the witness, so I'm trying to reroute my question here. So people talk about hospital at home as the future. So what do you think about the future in terms of where we're headed with medicine, and then bringing it back to what Hopco does, if we're definitely moving towards the home?
Sure. Well, so first I would say I love the population health model. I think things like shared risk, bundled care, all are kind of stepping stones to get to the point where you take full risk on a population. So when you are taking full risk on a population, it makes sense that you start thinking about value in a completely different way. And when you talk to most patients, Ed, I mean, most patients want to recover at home. It has historically not necessarily been the easiest thing for doctors to arrange that, because it's not how we've historically trained or practiced healthcare. But the idea, when you're kind of on the hook for the bill for the patient, and keep in mind, healthcare is an interesting area because it's one of the only areas in the world where the decision maker really bears very little financial risk for the decisions that they're making. So when you are taking risk on a population, you start thinking a lot more about what you're choosing to do and how you're choosing to manage that patient. So I'll give you some examples. You know, if you look around the country today, probably about 30% of patients after a hip or a knee replacement are going to a subacute nursing facility. If you look at Hopco's statistics, it's about 5%, maybe even less, are going to a subacute nursing facility. Patients are going straight home and they're getting their care at home. If you're looking at how many patients are being done as an outpatient, truly they get a joint replacement or a discectomy or even a single level fusion and going home on the same day prior to midnight, you know, our numbers are really quite impressive. About 40%, 50% of our patients go home the same day. Nationally, the number again is probably closer to 10 to 15%. So really kind of pushing that envelope. And it's interesting, COVID has really forced us to start thinking more and more out of the box in terms of care at home for a couple of very simple reasons. A, patients have had a little bit of a sense of fear about being in a hospital. So we've been using ASCs more effectively, and B, hospitals have been intentionally keeping their beds available for COVID patients, telling orthopedic surgeons, you can do your surgeries, but only if the patient goes home the same day. So it's really fast forwarded this move towards more care at home.
Yeah, I could see that. So as you know, this is Digital Voices, and I know from working with you previously that you're definitely a huge proponent of all things digital. So curious how you all leverage digital in each of these four verticals that you mentioned, because I imagine digital's got to be a key portion of each of those.
So everything we do, whether it's on the hospital side, on the practice side, on the management side, on the clinically integrated network side, all of those things together are all really based on a foundation of what we call Virtu Health. That is our software platform that we've invested now nearly $100 million in. And what that platform allows us to do is, in an EMR agnostic fashion, pull cost and quality data out in real time. That data then we make usable knowledge. So whether you're a hospital administrator, whether you're a practice manager, whether you are a practicing orthopedic surgeon or physical therapist, you can log on, get your dashboard, and see exactly how you're performing. And we do it, Ed, frequently in a very transparent way, where we'll ask that group, do you want this to be unblinded data? And most of the time, the answer is yes. And when it's unblinded, one of the beauties of musculoskeletal care is most musculoskeletal care providers tend to be extraordinarily competitive individuals. So as soon as you start seeing, well, gee, how come my knee replacement costs $300 more than Ed Marks's knee replacement? I'm going to figure that out. I'm going to get it down to you know, a dollar less than than it's costing him right now. And that competition actually helps to drive down the cost of care. But more importantly, it does it in a healthy way. It gets people to ask questions that perhaps they weren't asking before. The other part of the blessing, I would say, that we have through our Virtue Health platform is the use of clinically appropriate clinical care paths. So we'll work with a local community, and with that community we'll define an appropriate clinical care path for that community, and we'll put that care path into place, and physicians will be asked to utilize that care path, and not just docs, but any provider will be asked to utilize those clinical care paths, and their clinically integrated network bonuses will actually, a portion of them will be dependent on their adherence to those clinical care paths.
No, those are excellent examples, and it just makes me think, well, what you described in your software system is sort of the holy grail. Do you all have any intention of making this available to other specialties and other organizations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's certainly open to any organization that wants to work with us. We're happy to entertain more and more of those discussions. And very candidly, we are talking to a lot of groups, you know, at any given time. We've really remained focused on musculoskeletal care for now. And my guess is, you know, there are other organizations that'll sprout up that are doing some of this kind of work in cancer and heart and vascular and in more neurosciences. And I think that makes sense. But very candidly, right now, this market is very much a blue ocean. Nobody does what Hopco does in the musculoskeletal space in terms of full vertical integration. We're it. So the ability to kind of get our tentacles out all around the country right now has really kept us quite busy.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, I want to switch gears a little bit now and talk about from a leadership perspective. So you came from the Cleveland Clinic, as you shared, and you had all these opportunities for leadership, but you still practiced, I believe. And are you still practicing today?
I am. So yeah. I still do joint replacements, hip and knee replacements. And I'll tell you, I think it's important to remain clinically active for a couple reasons. Number one, you know, on the academic side, I'm really bought in to remaining academically active and publishing papers. And I think to do that in a meaningful way, you have to remain clinically active. So that's the first reason. The second reason is, as we speak with docs around appropriate clinical care paths and around utilization of care paths, if you're not living what you're asking them to live, if you're not walking the walk, it's pretty hard to get other folks to believe that what you're saying is meaningful. So, you know, my involvement on the academic side, I've been a member of both the Hip Society and the Knee Society, allows me, I think, the ability to pick up the phone, call another orthopedic surgeon, have a conversation around, you know, what they're doing and why they might be doing that. And I think people will at least be open to the conversation because they know that I'm walking the same walk that we're asking them to walk.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this or not, because I didn't really advertise it, but when we were together at Cleveland Clinic, I actually did one shift a week working in anesthesia. So I worked in the ORs from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Wednesday. And it was for the same reason. I'm not a physician, but I knew that it helps make you credible with the clinicians, no matter what your role is, as long as it was clinical. And so, and then the other benefit, you actually know what's going on. It was really working in the OR that I realized just the gap in terms of digital that we still had in the ORs themselves. I mean, all the different instrumentations and technology that didn't even speak to each other. So it's a whole new era, and also the possibilities for ambient voice and things like that. But anyways, the point is, it's helpful if you can show people that you understand, you can relate to them because you're doing the same thing, and you're not like in some ivory tower. So I've always appreciated that, and I suspected that's what you did where you are, but just checking in. So just in closing, Will, I would leave the last comments to you in terms of, is there anything else digital related or related to the healthcare outcomes performance company that you want to share that we didn't touch on?
Sure. You know, I think that the only last comment I would make, Ed, and it's kind of it's fitting that it's you and I having this conversation, we've both worked at incredible organizations, right? I did my residency at Cleveland Clinic. I did my fellowship at New England Baptist Hospital, went back to the Cleveland Clinic. I know you've been with University Hospitals of Cleveland. You've been with Cleveland Clinic. I mean, again, incredible organizations. You know, it is, I think, important for organizations, regardless of how strong their names are. And when you look around the country, there are incredible healthcare organizations, many of which have names that we all recognize, like Mayo Clinic and Johns Hopkins and Mass General, Brigham and Women's, and many names that we might not recognize, but still provide really, truly outstanding care. You know, I do think it's important for organizations today to be thinking about, how do we disrupt ourselves? You know, it's when you're really, really good at what you do, it's easy to stop thinking about, how do I continue to be great in healthcare delivery, right? Most organizations are thinking, how do I push the envelope on the next discovery in heart care, the next discovery in orthopedic care? But what that next discovery might actually be is the delivery of healthcare. And I think that's an opportunity for groups to continue to innovate.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. And probably the most important question of all, is skin and bones still going to be playing together?
I hope so. That's absolutely the plan.
Yeah, and I recall, I think your guitarist was also orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah. Yes. So our lead singer is an orthopod, and and we have one other guitarist actually that you know, Jim Gallagher, an IT guy. He's an awesome guy and a phenomenal guitarist.
Yeah, that was always fun. So hopefully I'll be able to find out when you guys play again and be part of that show. So well, thank you for your time. It's just fascinating what you're doing as part of the healthcare outcomes performance company. The digital capabilities that you were describing, it does sound like they're nirvana for, speaking of music, they're nirvana of you know, what we're looking for in healthcare, to have all that data in one place and make it actionable and have care paths and have measurements and be transparent with it. That's how you get the change. And so what you all are doing is just amazing. So thank you again for being my guest.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. It's really an honor, Ed. Thank you.
All right. As always, you can send questions via voice to questions@thehcigroup.com. That'll be in the show meeting notes, but we'll take your questions on air via voice and answer them. So thank you for being in our pod today, and we hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.